They step into the biggest shows with the biggest names. And sometimes they get written on or off in a moment's notice. It's time to find out all the dramatic details of what it's like to be a guest star. With your host, Pete Ferrero.
Let's go.
All right, this is really exciting. I have Alisa Donovan here with me on Guest Star. This is something that you've done a bunch of, guest starring on TV shows, yes?
Yes, yes, indeed.
How is everything going with you? I know you've got your book that's, you know, it's still out. It's doing great, yes? I know it's a really personal story, so I want to
get rid of it. Yeah, it's doing really well. I've been super excited to share it with everyone and to kind of open this next phase of my career with something that's so personal and that I'm really passionate about. So it's called Wake Me When You Leave, and it's a memoir about a year of my life where essentially everything fell apart and then I had to put it back together. My dad passed away from cancer. Sabrina was canceled.
Where around is this in the time period of your career? Where is this? What year or so?
This is 2003. So it was the last year of Sabrina, the Teenage Witch, the series. Mm. And then the show was canceled. And I thought I was going to go on to another series. And I tested for all these jobs and did not get one. My dad got diagnosed with cancer. The relationship ended with the person I thought I was going to marry. Then my dad died. And I just had this, you know, period of time where everything just fell apart. And I reevaluated my whole life. And my dad started to come to me in these dreams and otherworldly experiences that truly helped me to heal and also to just come to a new place in my life and understand really what I wanted to do going forward. So, you know, in a nutshell, it changed the trajectory of my life, I will say.
And your career too, right? I mean,
yeah.
All right, let's go back to the beginning here. I'm curious for you, where did the acting bug really come from? Where did it start? What made you want to get into doing all this?
Yeah. So it's funny. No one in my family, my uncle was an actor for a little bit in college, but no one in my family was in entertainment or.
You had creative. To mention that, or your uncle would have been like, I was an actor.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. He's probably up there going, hello, I was. Yeah. But so it came from doing a play in the first grade and just, I had no idea that it was something that you could do for a career, that people got paid for it, that it was just something we did in first grade. And I was so overly committed to my character and to creating this person. I was playing the bad guy and literally a man. And my mom was just sort of floored by the whole thing. She always remembers it like, I was the only one, everybody else was bumping into each other on stage is how she described it. And I was just completely invested in this character kind of in my own world. And that's really what started it. I wanted to start taking classes and just doing other plays. And I started studying, you know, outside of school, probably in sixth grade, I want to say sixth or seventh, but still with no real understanding of how to ever professionally get involved. It really came from a creative place.
That didn't happen until later, right? I mean, you were right. Doing plays and stuff, and then yes. Later on in your life. So you weren't one of those kid actors where
no.
You were going to school and people were seeing you on television.
No. And I think in some weird way, people associate me with Melissa or
yes.
Soleil or any of these people that were really young in the business. And I was not, I didn't have my first TV job until I was 20, I want to say.
Right.
So, or maybe 19. I didn't have that experience at all.
Were you in LA or were you somewhere else where this acting bug?
In New York.
You were in
New
York.
I grew up on Long Island and I went to college in Manhattan at Eugene Lang College, which is the undergrad school of the New School. Mm-hmm. Where they used to do Inside the Actor's Studio.
Yes.
And so it was a very progressive school and I studied writing and literature and acting. So it was not just strictly an acting school.
Well, my Mets beanie must make you feel like you're at home.
I'm trying to ignore your Mets hat because I'm a big Yankee fan. So I'm just trying to not see you from like here up. That's
great. All right. So, but you do come to LA at some point, right? I mean, at some point, you know, so tell me about that journey.
Yeah. So I was doing a play in New York City at La Mama, which is how I got my Equity card. And which incidentally I co-wrote. And I cut out all of the reviews of the play and sent them to agents to get them to come.
This is before the internet and where you could just drop an email and send it to the.
Yes. No, this is old school. I had to wait for the Daily News to come out, wait for the Times to come out, cut it out. And it was a whole process. Send in a hard copy of my 8x10 photos. And agents came, and the one agency that I really liked wanted to represent me. And I met with them and they started representing me. And then I got very busy, but didn't really book anything, but had a lot of activity. And they had an affiliate in LA. And so I went to LA just for a few weeks to work with that agent and to stay with a friend of mine who is a playwright that I had known from New York. And that's how it happened. I went to LA. I again didn't get a job, but in the 2 or 3 weeks that I was there, I tested for 90210 to replace Shannon. It was Tiffany Thiessen, Meredith Salinger, and myself. And Tiffany obviously got it. And then I went back to New York, packed everything up and went back to LA within a month, I guess I want to say. And then I booked Blossom.
For actors who are, or any creatives that are in that space of where it feels like almost everything and nothing is happening at the same.
Yes. It's a very familiar feeling.
Right. It's all happening. What's happening? Nothing.
Nothing. Can you pay your rent?
Great. What is that process like, though, in those days? I mean, this is the 90s, too. We're all talking about the 90s now, right? So it's exciting. Yes. Finally, my era is finally, you know, I'm a 90s kid, so it's finally being talked about. It was always the 60s, you know, which I love that. Oh, I love that.
Yeah, I like it, too.
Yeah.
You know, I always distinctly felt as though I was at an advantage having come from New York and having been trained in New York. Being classically trained helps with anything. It helped me be a good sitcom actress, which you might not really think is relevant at all. But when you have classic strong training, it just opens up everything for you. So I really felt like I was at an advantage, and there's such a different vibe to New York that you're just pounding the pavement, you're constantly up against people. And so there's a real vibrance to that kind of experience. And so I feel like I arrived in LA with a lot of energy and a real passion and desire to succeed. And then being able to be in your car and get to an audition, that was revelatory, because in New York, you're on the subway or you're walking, you're sweating. By the time you get there, you've gotten the flu from rubbing up against people on the train. You know what I mean? Like, it's
just some Met fan. Yeah.
There's some Met fan who gave you the flu. But, you know, so I felt like, oh my gosh, I can actually prepare while I'm driving and arrive in my air conditioned car. You know, it was so everything was kind of new, and I feel like that helped me. It gave me a good energy.
So give me the lay of the land of the 90, that period. And then I'm going to ask you about Blossom, but that period of time, the early 90s, what is that Hollywood in the 90s like at that time?
What is it like? It was very, you know, it's funny. when you look back at so many things that period of time, it was very flashy in a kind of happy way, like shiny happy way, that was very upbeat, I would say, rather than an edgy sort of dark underbelly type of thing, because a lot of the TV shows at that time, a lot of the films at that time were just not, they were not interested in this kind of other side of things. And I always felt like I wanted to do these gritty dramas, and I wanted to do, which, and then I get cast as, you know, the dumb pretty girl. And I'm thinking, this is not exactly where I thought I was going, but.
What a twist.
Yeah, what an unexpected twist. But so, you know, it was just a different thing. And then when I look back at it, I go, oh yeah. And it was totally sexist. And it was people were allowed to say things to you that they would never be allowed to say today, you know, but literally look at you and go, no, she looks fat in that, you know, or she needs to be, no, you need to stuff her bra because if you're not even there, you know, these things that, and you're just used to it.
You're also from New York. So it's like, I've heard something way worse on the subway.
Yeah, exactly. I heard something way worse walking to my car, you know, or I'm walking to the subway.
Yeah. So I'm good on that. You sure heard what the truck driver said. Well, I want to ask you, though, I mean, I want to go back to what you said about auditioning for Brenda, or the Brenda replacement for Shannon. Mm-hmm. That is a huge show.
Yes.
And this is before, you know, everybody knows that later on you do go on to 90210, and that's a different time period. So this is just as you're sort of like finding yourself as an actor in LA, and you're going on an audition. Walk me through what that experience was like, auditioning on a show of that nature.
First of all, I had never seen the show, and I'm not lying. I had never seen it, but I was obviously very aware.
You're aware of 90210.
A hugely famous and popular show.
Yes.
So I think because I had never seen it, I didn't feel as intimidated, but I was completely intimidated by the entire process, because I was just beginning. So the audition process, that means that you start, your first audition is with the assistant casting director. So that's the first guard that you have to get past. And that if they say, oh, you should look at this girl, she's interesting, she's good. Mm-hmm. Then you go to the casting director. Then the casting director says, okay, you're gonna go to a producer session. Then you might have two producer sessions. So each time you're doing this, it gets more and more intense because the stakes are higher.
Sure.
There are scarier looking people in the room, you know,
it's starting to feel plausible that this might happen too.
Correct. Exactly. It goes from this amorphous thing of, oh, I'm going to throw away these sides in the garbage to, oh, I know them literally by heart. And it's in my system, and it feels like it could be very real.
Right.
And so every time the final audition being, I remember two things. One, I remember I think it was the second to last that was at Aaron Spelling's office and the big offices they used to, it was like an entire block. It felt like Wilshire Boulevard. Right. And sitting in, you know, you just go through these hallways, and I just felt like, I can't even believe where I am right now. And I sat in the waiting room, and I was reading David Copperfield, this Charles Dickens book. And one of the other girls in the room said to me, they wrote a book about him. And I said, what? And she said, yeah, the guy who just got married to Claudia Schiffer. And I thought, I am in an alternative universe. Like, this is not a book about the magician. Right. Like, have you ever read a book? And I just thought, like, what's going on here? And so I remember that. So I think that also kind of helped me. It took my nerves away a little bit, because I was just going, oh my God. And then, so I remember that. And then I remember the final, the audition at Fox at the studio, which was, I mean, I was so, so, so nervous. And I think there are some people that maybe, I know actually there are people that really thrive in that environment, in the audition environment, but most actors do not.
They say some actors really hate that part of the process.
Mm-hmm. And I hated it, because I was nervous, and I would get really insecure. And I feel like at one point in the middle of that, and also I knew the material so well, and then you're just, you know, waiting and waiting and walking in circles. And then I remember walking into the office, and I think I just sort of blanked out for a minute and just smiled and stood there and then went, oh, I should begin. Like, I guess I should do something.
They want me to start now. Yeah.
You want me to start now. Okay.
this was for Valerie. Is that?
Yes. Right. Yes. And I was so bummed because I really thought that I was going to get it. And then
when you get the call that you don't get it.
Oh, it was so awful.
But I mean, everything works out in this
story. They did, and it was a great what's the right word? You know, to not get it. It was a very lovely thing that they said to me, and they said how we're going to have her on the show for sure. And it was clear that I think they had already planned on having Tiffany do it, but probably they needed to bring in some other people and see and make sure that was what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
So I felt, you want to believe that that's true, that they're going to have you on. But then I thought, well, when is that going to be? Because they're developing a new character. So I just didn't really think
right,
about
you thought
it
was just what's been said. But yes. So how do you deal with that? How do you, I mean, and I can confirm that from talking to Brian, that Brian and Tiffany were dating at the time. And yes. I think that Tiffany was definitely getting that.
Yes.
Like that, yes. So it was,
that was very clear after the fact to me. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
But again, I didn't know any of this, right?
No. But I mean, like, so it wasn't like something that you did in an audition that didn't work out or something like that. It was like a clear cut, like they yes. asked Brian, is it okay if Tiffany's on the show? Like they want to bring, so like yes. that's where they were kind of going with that.
I think so. Sure. So that's also why I did have a little faith that they meant it when they said they thought I was great and they will have me back.
It is interesting too, because they do bring you back as Valerie's friend, and they did give yeah. you a nice arc in that season where you came yes. back a few times. So they obviously, you did get it in a way. Yes. You got the next thing yes. that would have been, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Okay. So you get Blossom, right? At some point really early on. What is that like? I talked to, David Lasher.
Oh, I love David.
He's so sweet. Yeah. He's a great dude.
Great.
And his perspective, you know, he was obviously a guest star that got cast and then was pretty much, I think he was a guest star the whole time, but he was on the show quite a bit because he was the boyfriend and all of that. But he said that, you know, that Joey Lawrence at the time was like really hard to get to be around. Not I don't mean it like that, but like there was a lot of people around him. He was, yes. his fame was rising in a way that it yes. was untouchable. You know what I mean? Like he yes. was having a lot of people in his universe now. It was not just what it may have previously been.
Yes.
What was your experience like coming onto that set?
So I definitely felt that also, but my scenes were with Joey. So
right.
I hadn't seen the show. I didn't really, I mean, then once I was auditioning, I was trying to watch it, but again, you couldn't just YouTube an episode of a show. It was you had to wait for it to be on. Right.
Yeah.
And if your audition was in 2 days, you better not hope happening. It was on that night. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. But, maybe go to the library and see if
exactly. They yeah. Go get out that tape, that whatever. That, yeah. So I again remember feeling very intimidated, but I liked the process because multi-camera shows are more like theater. So to me, it was a nice segue. That was the first job in LA that I had. So even though the material is quite different than, you know, Chekhov or something, you're still doing a lot, you know, a live performance, and you're performing this way as if there's a, you know, the fourth wall. And so there were some things that made me feel more comfortable, but I was just so intimidated the whole time. And Joey, with live audience shows like that, before the night of the show, they introduce you to the audience. And I can't remember They do. They introduce even the guest cast and people are like, whatever, like, who's this girl? Like, no one cared. But Joey, when they introduced him, even more so than Maya, it was like a panic, you know, these people were screaming.
Like, it was, it's Beatle-like, you know, or New Kids on the Block-like, right?
Yes, totally. Yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And, but we just had a fun, I played really well off of him and Gil Unger, who was, I think he was one of the EPs, but he was also directing the first episode I did. I could tell that he liked me and he knew that I could handle whatever they threw at me. And so it was really fun. And I always joke, I loved Mayim. She was so young, you know, she was, I feel like she was maybe 17 when I was there or 16.
Yeah.
And she asked me about college. She said, so you, and I, you know, you went to college. And I said, oh yes. I studied English literature and writing. And she was like, She said, yeah, I think that's what I, and I said, no, you should absolutely do that. So yeah, I'm always joking. I'm like, she could thank me for becoming a brilliant
this was your, neuroscientist. This was your doing. No. Right.
Yeah. No, but she was super down to earth. So it was funny. I felt like she was far more accessible.
It's interesting too, because that show is so big and you don't really even know it. Like, you know what I mean? Right. But you have to know when you're there, like, and in that process where you just talked about where they introduce everybody and everybody screams for Joey. Yes. What is it like? And that's probably going to happen. And that's going to happen for you down the line here, you know, with some of the work that you do.
Yeah.
But when you see that as, you know, someone who's just coming to LA working on a show, what is that like to witness from afar? You know what I mean?
I do. I know what you mean. And I don't know. I feel like I think because it's in my nature to be contrarian. I think when I saw that, I went, this is not important. You know, I sort of took the opposite tack of, I'm not impressed with this, you know, and that could have been my, my insecurities or, but I also, as a person, I don't get very impressed by that sort of stuff because I know it's not real. It's not that people don't feel that way. It's just that it's not a, I don't know. I just have never really been that, affected by it, but it was intimidating. Yes.
Intimidating, but also was it something that you saw that you were like, I want that?
That's an interesting question. I think this is going to sound weird. I think I felt as though I already had it. It didn't matter. You know, I felt like I was a part of this community or something, you know?
And by that alone, you had already achieved something that you wanted.
I think so. Yeah. And don't get me wrong. It was clear that these people were far more successful than I was and all of those
at
things
that time.
Were well known at that time. But I felt like it didn't feel uncomfortable for me, I guess is what I mean.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And you belonged.
Yes. That's what I felt like. Mm-hmm.
And then, okay. So then is Clueless the next big thing or is it 90210? I'm always like confused about the process of coming in to do 90210 and when you get Clueless. Yeah.
So when I tested for Shannon's for the Brenda, the replacement that was before Blossom. So that test
right, that's first. Yeah.
Over maybe it was July, I want to say, or June or something. And then Blossom happens in October-ish. Then I auditioned for Clueless for the film in November and got the job. And Blossom, I was supposed to go back to Blossom. They wrote one episode for me that I was hired for one. Then they liked our dynamic. So they wrote another one. So I went back again. And then they were writing two more, but I wasn't contracted to them. And so I got Clueless and it conflicted and I wasn't able to go back to
Blossoms. It is interesting because I watched the Blossoms today and there is really great chemistry between the two characters. You're absolutely hilarious. You know, just your confusion about everything is just,
I'll have to go back and watch that. I haven't seen it.
Oh my God. It is so funny. I mean, I was laughing so much and I haven't really watched much Blossom, but I don't know. The last few months I've been watching a lot of Blossom because I had, David on and Melanie Smith did an episode that I think an episode that you were in. But anyway, so it is interesting. It's really well done. And I thought they would definitely bring you back because there's like no really.
Well, that's why. So I got Clueless. Then the film came out and then that's when 90210 wrote. I mean, I don't think they wrote it because of Clueless, but I mean, the timing was great. That film came out. Or it hadn't even come out yet, actually, but there was a lot of buzz about it. And then I was hired for 90210 and the movie, the premiere happened while I was shooting 90210. So I think it was and then they went, oh, we should have Elisa promote, because I think at that point, all the actors on that show were probably going, we are not promoting this show anymore. You know, they were probably like,
you mean 90210?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. I think they had all done it so many times. And sure. I remember they had me shoot a couple of things to promote the show, like the new
season. Oh, that was so smart of them.
Of the show. Yes.
I gotta give those guys some credit on that end. But think about that little period of time for you, right? Because that is like everything is happening. You know, I mean,
yeah, it was a lot at one time for sure.
Blossom is out. They want you in more. You don't get the Valerie part, right? So it almost feels like the what am I here for? Maybe even at one point, you know, when you don't get something that big, but then you get Blossom, you get Clueless, right? I mean, it's like, and then you got the job that you essentially did. So it's a whole lot of things.
Things are working out great here.
when you talk to me about shooting the movie Clueless, I'm always curious about that because it is such an iconic film now. And it definitely was in that time period too. Things become iconic years later, but I think there's a sense when something comes out, like this is a huge movie that really speaks to that generation. Mm-hmm. Did you know that when you were shooting that movie? Is there any way to get that perspective? Like this is going to be one of those that's like,
right,
iconic, you know.
I don't know, people ask that, it's hard to say. I do know that it felt like everybody was doing an excellent job at what they were doing, everyone across the board, all departments, all. So but I also hadn't done a ton of things, so I felt like, oh, maybe this is just always the way it is,
right?
But it certainly felt as though there was a precision and a chemistry and just a great vibe about the whole thing that felt like this is going to resonate with people. And, but I didn't really know. And it was super fun for me because I, half the time, you know, all of that wardrobe that my character had, they were constantly inventing it. And it was this really fun process, you know, between finding them, designing these incredible things, and then working with hair and makeup, and then adding things to it. So even though it just, the whole process was so much fun for me in that regard. And really just, there was always something to be worked on and done, you know. But it wasn't until we saw, there was a test audience screening of the film that Alicia, Paul, Donald, Justin, and myself went to, and we sat in the back row, and I was sitting next to Alicia, and I just went, oh my God, you're going to be so famous. Like this movie, this is going to change your life. Like I knew it was going to change for all of us. It would be successful, but I just went, this is going to be a successful movie. Like it was clear from the second that we saw it.
What about becoming this character, Amber? Were you her?
No, I based her on girls in high school that were mean to me and that's in great. Junior high. Yeah. Oh yeah. I just always saw them and I just based it, the whole thing on them. And also I had a boyfriend that I loved desperately and we fought all the time. This is, you know, when I was 17 to 19,
right.
And then we broke up and got back together and broke up. And he would always say whatever to me. He'd always be like, whatever, in this way. And it drove me bananas. It infuriated me. So when that was her word, I just went, oh,
this is great.
I can't wait to use this. This is just divine providence. I was so psyched.
I told a friend, you know, that I was interviewing you today, and then people start immediately quoting things. Yeah. You know? I mean, it was like so many different things. And I've seen the movie a bunch of times, but I was like, I don't know which one of these to say to her, you know, and say this and say this. But so, I mean, people must be doing this to you. This must be happening where you're walking somewhere and they do the whatever, yes, and all that shit. That must happen, right?
Oh, yeah. All the time. All the time. Mm-hmm.
What is so, that like?
Well, it's weird, but it's also, I'm so used to it.
By now. Yeah.
Yes. And then they go, you know, it ebbs and flows. Obviously the first few years it happened all the time. And then it just continued to happen for years. And then there was like a little quiet time of it.
I could just be me now, right?
Come back again. Oh no, it's, you know, I was at the doctor's office the other day and had to, one of the anesthesiologist came up to me. I just had to have like a routine thing. And he said afterwards, he said, it was very professional. At first, very professional. And then afterwards, it was over. He just said, I just wanted to say, you have made me laugh for so many
That's
years.
Sweet.
And it was super sweet. You know, it was really nice. And it was clear that it was like really a burning desire that he wanted to tell me this. And then it made sense, sort of his expression beforehand. I thought, oh, he's nervous. And nobody wants your anesthesiologist to be nervous.
Fuck,
you
know, this up.
Please do not screw this up. And so, but it was sweet. Yeah, it was sweet.
That's awesome. All right, I want to ask you though, when you did 90210, the movie wasn't out yet, but you knew that you had this sort of brewing, that this film is coming, mm-hmm, and it's going to be successful. I'm curious, because I've done a lot of 90210 interviews, and I don't remember if we talked about this on the other show, but... Mm-hmm. What were the girls like to you when you came on as a guest star?
Oh yeah, they were great. I had lunch every day with Jenny and Tori mainly. And I mean, Tiffany, because we worked together. And so she was super nice. I felt very welcomed by them completely. They took me to, what was the name of that place? Elaine, Marty and Elaine.
Okay, I never heard, this is amazing.
And they, you know, Jenny and Tori took me, and Jenny's like, oh yeah, we got to go see Marty and Elaine. And I went, I'm thinking it's going to be some like big Hollywood thing. And it's literally an older woman, an older man. She's singing and he's playing the piano, and it's literally a cork wall. And I thought, all right, these two are cool. Like, I like these two. You know?
It's interesting though, because, you know, some people have different perspectives of coming onto 90210, and
some people feel really uncomfortable,
yes,
or like,
yes,
outside that, of the loop.
Yes. Yeah. And so what do you think it is about? I'm curious, what do you think it is about you?
I don't know. Maybe it's because I don't know. It was certainly clear that they all had their own dynamics and that they all knew each other really well. And it's very hard to kind of insert yourself in that. And maybe because I didn't really try, and, you know, we weren't, you know, best friends or something, but I really felt like I had a lovely time. And they were very welcoming and nice to me. And it was fun. Like, I had a really good time on that show. Everybody was great.
I want to ask you about Tiffany too, because you auditioned for that part, and now here you are as that character's best friend, whatever, you know, yeah, as Ginger. What was that like to, because now you're like, you don't usually, you hear about that, right? You didn't get cast in it, but now here you are alongside of it. watching it in your face. You know what I mean? Like, this is, has happened.
Right.
Did you feel Tiffany was a great Valerie? And then also, what is that experience like to be in those shoes of like, I auditioned for this shit.
Right. I think because so much, I think if I hadn't worked in between those two things, it would be a very different experience. I probably would have had a hard time getting past just thinking about all of that. But I don't remember really thinking that much about it. And maybe that's a nice magical memory that I'm using here, but I don't really remember. I do remember thinking, oh, this is a whole different way than I would have played this character. You know, her version of that character was very different than what mine would have been.
I'm fascinated by that. Can I ask you what your version of Valerie looks like?
I think it probably looked more like Ginger. And that's probably
one of the things that they saw that were like, this would be a better, because they probably, I mean, I think they knew that Ginger would be in the mix.
Yeah.
So they were like, she's way better Ginger than she is a Valerie. And they're going to give Tiffany Valerie anyway. You know what I mean?
And I was never getting that job, right? It would have been great to know that going in.
Clueless coming out. It's a huge movie. What is that? Now you're kind of, I mean, you're in a project where you're the Joey Lawrence in a way, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. You're in a huge film and you've seen that. We've talked about that. You've mm-hmm. auditioned, and all this is happening relatively quickly to you getting to LA. You know what I mean? Yes. Like, this is the energy, the New York hustle is working, because here you are. Yes. Only a couple of years later and this mm-hmm. movie's out. So what is that like for you?
It was, again, very weird, because I went from obscurity basically to anywhere I went, people recognizing me. And, you know, I think in some way, I don't know why this is, but Amber, that character, she's not on screen that much.
That's but right.
Somehow people think that it's a much bigger, I mean, I remember watching that first screening and going, wait, they cut this and they cut that. And, you know, cause that's what happens. You have to,
of course,
cut things, whether mm-hmm. it's great or not. And, so I was so bummed out by that. But I thought it was weird that I was so recognizable, I guess. And I understood pretty quickly how powerful that the animal of film and TV is. Like, I was really struck by that. I went to the movies with a friend and we went up the escalator and all these people were just hovering around and whispering and going. And we both said, oh, there must be somebody famous on the escalator. And we're looking around, looking back and forth. And then I come to the top and it's me. And they're all talking
weird,
to
right?
me. Yeah. And I went, oh, this is really weird. Like, this is weird. And you just then realize, oh, okay, and especially because it's for young people, you know, that turned into this thing of me understanding, especially when we started to do this series, that young girls and young people are watching this stuff. So I felt this kind of responsibility and accountability to not be an idiot publicly. You
That's
know?
Hard though. Because you can, and we all are, you know, yes. You know what I mean? Like, we all yes. can very easily be an idiot. Yes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm curious, were there, you know, like, for some of the guys that, like a Joey Lawrence that gets this, there's the element of the girls that are really into him. Did you have that with guys?
I mean,
fanboys?
Probably, but I didn't, you know, I don't know. I just didn't.
You didn't play into it.
No, no, because I also always, I don't know. I was just, I really was interested in the work of it all the time. Not that mm-hmm. I was some perfect angel by any stretch, but I mean, I just didn't, I was not a person, I didn't like to go to the parties. I love parties. I didn't like to go to the parties that were supposed to be helping you to get somewhere. You know, I did not like that. I was completely fine with doing press lines and things like that, or something where I had to talk about the project or do something specifically for it. But that kind of schmoozy thing, or let's go to a nightclub and sit in the right spot kind of thing, I did not like that. I just felt uncomfortable and it wasn't fun.
But you did have to do it at times, I would imagine.
At times. And then I actually hung out with Shannon a couple of times.
Oh, that's fascinating.
At what point in the process was all of this? I don't know. She was not on the show.
She had left the show.
She had left the show. But I wonder if I had already done it or I hadn't. Oh, I think I was doing Sabrina. So I think I had already done it.
You did 90210. Yeah.
Yes. And so I think we had the same hairdresser who I was really becoming friendly with, and he did. So somehow I wound up out with her and then in her car, and we left this nightclub and I went, oh, this is whacked out what this person has to deal with. And I know people have a lot of different feelings and opinions about her.
I love her.
Yeah. And I just thought, we walked out of, even inside the club, it was like people were constantly, not that there were crowds, but it was clear that people were trying to get something from her. And then the second we stepped outside of there, paparazzi, but before paparazzi was really like it was people who were just aggressive and creepy, you know? And I just thought, this is hard for her, you know? This is hard. Nobody was doing that to me, you know? And I just thought, this is a tough situation, you know?
It's interesting to see that too, because you're seeing a bunch of different versions of this, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And Shannon definitely is someone that had it. I mean, look, she had it rough at times being a young actress in Hollywood. That's a lot of responsibility, especially one that's constantly being talked about and gossiped about on television, whether it's a current affair, you know, you're not on that show anymore. You're a problem, you know, once an industry labels you as something, that's it. How do you change the narrative in the 90s?
Yes. Yes. I think that was a very difficult thing to do. And also actors are, this is something that I can say I'm pretty proud of, that I think I've done pretty well. I'm sure I've had my moments of being a diva and somebody thinks I'm a bitch somewhere, but I really, for the most part, have really tried to manage my ego and my, because sometimes you're just tired. And also,
no doubt,
people are, you know, actors are catered to in every way. Do you need a water? Do you need a, oh, what are you, like always giving you, but the thing is, they're catered to because it's about money and time. So I need to get you that water, because if you go leave and get the water, then you're going to wander and start chatting with someone, and then we're going to be ready to shoot and we're behind an hour. There are really very logistical reasons for half of that.
Yes.
But then you put that together with people liking what you do. And if you don't have a sense of yourself, like your ego can just go bananas.
Sure.
And if you're super young, you're already just trying to figure out who you are in the first place. So it's complicated. You know, you really have to be grounded.
I'm curious, as the success, as you started to find more success in Hollywood, somebody once described it to me as like Pac-Man, lots of people wanting things from you. Yeah. Did you get a sense of that from the people around you?
Yes, I did. I definitely got that from, now I'm remembering a few guys and men and hangers on. Now it's coming back to me.
Someone's face just appeared in your.
Yes, something just went. So I remember that. But I also, again, because I, like I said, I don't know if it's just that I was insecure, or my motivations were really about the work of it and the creative process. I mean, I'm not saying that to sound like a dork or to sound like I'm super cool and smart. That really was what I was doing. So I just generally tried to kind of stay grounded. So I didn't have some big posse of people. I mean, I didn't. Mm-hmm. I have more of a group of friends, you know, in the last 15 years than I ever had then. You know, it was, I had individual people and that was it. You know, I didn't, that kind of herd mentality thing, it just did not jive with me at all.
You do Just Shoot Me, I think you do
it. Yeah. Oh my gosh, I loved that.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about that.
That was amazing. So George Segal is like, he was incredible. And I sat down at the table read, and he said to me, I think I was sitting next to him, and he leans into me and he says, "You've got a big head. You're going to do very well in this business."
There you go.
Yeah. He goes, "I have a big head." Mm-hmm. It's worked really well for me.
There you go.
And then, we did the table read. He's like, "And you're funny. You're going to be great." You know, I always think about it. He told me I have a big head, which I do. So he was right.
There you go. I mean, so you're going from, now you're doing some guest star stuff, right? Because you do something called Jack and Jill, right? And yes. Then at some point you get Sabrina.
Yes.
And this becomes, I mean, you do also do the TV show, the TV version of Clueless.
Yes, we did that for 3 years, which, you know, nobody really likes to talk about, but I had a great time. For the first 2 years, we had fun. I think everybody was a little bit kind of over it by the end, but we did some pretty funny things on that show. So I did that for 3 years, but it kind of went into, you know, oblivion by the end. And so then, yeah, I think that's when I did the other things like Just Shoot Me and all of that, maybe.
In between. Mm-hmm. And when is that, like, I mean, because, you know, we talked, I mean, and a lot of it's still happening. Like, it's, the work is consistent, right? Like, you're still getting jobs.
Yeah.
It might not be the Clueless job, right? Yeah. You know what I mean? But what is that in between period between, like...
It's hard. I will say it's really hard, because when you go from being... Even from doing the series, just working on being a series regular is incredibly hard work. It's a lot of hours. You're just, it's hard work, and you're in somewhat of a bubble. And so when you're used to doing something that you're getting paid really well for, that is successful, that is in the magazines and you're on TV all the time, you get like a, you know, there's a certain amount you just think it's never going to not be that way.
Right.
So then when that ends and maybe something doesn't come up right away, it, you know, that's when you really learn about the business and the process and what it is to really be an actor and what you have to withstand and stamina that you have to have and the perseverance and all of that, because you could go a couple of ways. You could start to be really entitled and feel like I should be doing this. I'm not doing some crap show, or I'm not doing, you know, I should be. And I wouldn't imagine that would be a very successful way to go. No. Or you could start to feel really insecure and like you're not good at what you do. You know, you can do a lot of tricks on yourself. So it's really important to remember that there are ebbs and flows. You know, it's a marathon, not a sprint, that whole thing.
And just keep yourself in the game.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Yep. Get, and then you do get Sabrina, which is another huge phenomenon show.
Like, I've been pretty fortunate in that regard. Yeah.
What was it like doing that show?
So that also was coming into this situation where everybody has been together for a while and it's already a successful show. And Melissa, whom I had met because Clueless, the series, and Sabrina started the same year, same season, and they were both on ABC. So we were on buses together, you know, our faces, and we were at the upfronts together. So I had met her a couple of times, but I didn't really know her well, but I knew who, you know, we had met. And that show immediately, they were a family. I mean, it was, her mom was the executive producer, but they treated everyone like family completely. And she, you know, they had parties and workouts together. And, you know, it was very much an inclusive kind of situation where they welcomed you into it and wanted everybody to be, you know, a family, really. So it was pretty.
Is this around the time? So Sabrina Does it get canceled? Is this around the time of when we would get to the books stuff that's happened?
So 3 years. I did Sabrina for 3 years, three seasons. And that was at the end of Sabrina. Yes, is when we get into what the whole book is about.
Well, let's talk about that though, because we've talked about the ride and the journey up, right? I mean, mm-hmm. And now this is a lot of things that are all going to happen to you in a different way, right? It seems like mm-hmm. it's all happening at the same time again, but in a yes. you know, in a very different way, right? Yes. This is a very sad time in your life. Yes. I don't know, walk me through the process of those things that happened to you.
So I think we knew that the show that Sabrina was, that was going to be the last season. We did know because they wrote it in such a way. Yes. So we knew beforehand. So I, again, assumed, oh, I'm just going to go on to another show. And I, you know, if you're on a series and you don't know if it's going to be picked up or not, you do what's called second position. So you are auditioning for pilots, but they can't hire you, or they have to hire you in second position, which means that the other show will always have residence. So most of the time they're just not going to hire you. They're going to find somebody else. But so in this case, I could be in first position. And right. So I thought, oh, this is a home run. This is going to be fine. Mm-hmm. And it was at this period, you know, I was 30, I guess. Wait, I'm trying to think about 31. But never looked 31. So I looked like I was younger, but people didn't believe that I could be a mom because I played these characters that were not very matronly, you know, and not very maternal.
Yeah, right.
And so it was always like, well, she can't have a child, but yet they're casting people who are 29 to play the parent of a teenager. You know, it was this very weird moment. Mm-hmm. And so it just, I kind of didn't fit into the age range of things. And I tested, I remember, for 11 shows, 11, which means you're at the, you know, it's the end of the line. It's you and one other person or two other people. Mm-hmm. And that is debilitating and exhausting. So 11 times I go through this process and think, I cannot believe I'm not getting a job. Then my relationship starts to deteriorate, which I knew, not because of that. It was the kind of thing where we realized that we were going in different directions, and I didn't want it to end, but I knew it had to. And he felt the same, like he wanted to keep.
It takes a very long time, right?
It's yes.
drawn out process.
Yes. Yes. And you know, we had this one night where it was like, neither of us could sleep. And we just went, this has to, like, you've got to go. And he moved his stuff out. We weren't living together, but we basically were. And it was bad. And so he leaves. I find out again that I don't get another job.
Ooh,
and
this is a lot. Like,
and then my mom goes, my brother called and says, Dad has cancer and it's terminal and it's inoperable. And I was sitting in my car.
Is dad in New York?
They're in North Carolina.
North Carolina.
He retired and they moved to North Carolina. And I was sitting in my car at this market off of Franklin, and I have the script on the seat next to me from, you know, some job I didn't get. I am looking, I'm just staring out the window and going, and my brother calls and tells me this. And I just went, oh my God, like every piece of my life is literally falling apart. Like everything is just being taken away one by one by one. And that was the beginning of, and I just thought, you can't really understand that hearing that until you've gone through it. It's such an amorphous thing. Like cancer is this big word that I always felt like, I don't even know what that means. Like, what is it? That's just never going to happen to me.
And it's also not in your universe, right? You know what I mean? Unless they give it to you in a script, I'm not making a joke, but completely. It's just not in your, universe. It's not, you're constantly hustling. You're constantly fighting for this career and for all of this journey.
Yes.
Right. So how can you even identify with what's happening?
Exactly. And then I'm thinking, I just got to get a job. I have to get a job. Like that's going to make everything better.
Wow.
Get another job. And then my dad's not going to have cancer. That's how it's going to go, you know? And of course that is not what happened. Although in that period of time, right before my dad was sick for only 5 months and then died. And in those couple of months, I did shoot this other, I shot Judging Amy, mm-hmm. that show, which was like the greatest gift ever. I feel like I've had these really lovely, amazing experiences as a guest star. Cause that show, incredible. I loved it. Marcus Giamatti, I played opposite him. All my scenes are with him. I had to play like a country rock singer. It was so fun. And it was a phenomenal distraction because I just needed something to do, you know? So I did work a little bit there, and then my dad passed away and everything just kind of fell apart. I would go into auditions and not care. Cause I was just going, I don't really want to do this. I don't think, you know? And then I would think, well, they know who I am. So they'll get it. They can hire me or they won't. Mm. And the reality is you can't go into someone's office and that's not how it works.
There is a big manifesting part of this business, yes. right? So yes. you certainly mm-hmm. weren't manifesting, I'm going to get that job. It was like, I want to get out of this office.
Completely. There's one scene that I talk about in the book that was so, I mean, the amazing part is that now I sent the book to these casting directors, but it was a pilot, and I don't even remember. It did wind up going for like a year, and it was a comedian, new guy who was a comedian, not an actor. And my dad had just died, and I had come back from the funeral, and my manager, who was a real a-hole at the time, but did a couple of nice things to comfort me, but he is a bad guy. And he had said to me, you have to go to this. Like, you have to go to this. You can't not go to this audition. It's a studio test. Like, it's the second to the last, like, you've got to go. It's you.
And this is right around the time that your dad died.
Yeah. He had just passed away. And so I'm trying to keep it together. And I walk up, they call my name, and this casting director pulls me aside and says, we're so sorry about your dad. And she was so kind. Oh my God, I could cry right now, that I just went, oh my God. And I almost started crying, and I said, thank you. And then we took a second and we walked in the room, and I just saw these studio people and this comedian who I thought is just, this guy doesn't even know how to act. I'm like, what am I doing in here? Mm-hmm. And I remember just, I mean, I blew it so, so wholeheartedly that I remember them just kind of staring at me like, does she know this is a comedy? You know, like, what right. happened here? Is she right. reading a different script?
Right.
And I just tanked it so bad. And I just walked out and I thought, I don't even know if I can do this anymore. You know,
act.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how I felt. And I felt as though I don't, like, what do I really want to do with my life? Is this what I want to do? Do I want to be doing another, you know, it be turned into this whole reevaluation of my life, really, you know? So, but then again, like, this is the beautiful part of it, right? I got to sign a book to these casting directors who were very kind to me. And, you know, it felt like full circle kind of thing. You know?
Sure.
You guys remember this moment. And the one said, I absolutely remember this. And I remember the whole, you know, so it was a really nice kind of closure to all of that.
Sure. I want to ask you, a lot of people who listen to this, listen to podcasts, you never know when someone's going to listen to it.
Yeah.
If they're going through what you went through in that time period, do you have anything that you would say or thoughts on now that you're looking back on it?
Yeah. I mean, they probably aren't going to want to hear what I have to say, which is that you just really have to sit with it. Like, you just have to walk through it. There isn't any way around it. That's the best advice I can give, that I think it feels as though grief and that kind of pain and challenge is just going to swallow us whole, and we'll never get over it. And the irony is, the more that we try to avoid it, that's what extends it. You know, we just have to really go through it, and it becomes something that can make your life fuller, you know, the way instead of like, these are all pieces of the human experience. And we all are going to go through loss and challenge in various ways and to varying degrees. But I do think it becomes a choice of how you want to go through life, you know? Mm-hmm. And I would say to try to connect with people. Like one of the main things that I've loved about this book coming out is that complete strangers contacting me and telling me how much it meant to them, how much it has helped them, and how, you know, that's what I wanted. Cause it felt, I felt so isolated when this was happening and people just don't really know how to talk about difficulty. You know, we just want to talk about everything's great and shiny and pretty and expensive, you know, and it's, that's not an authentic way to live. And it's, that's not real. I mean, that's not how life is, you know?
Absolutely. And you're still working. You're still acting. Yes. You're.
Yeah. I mean, some, yes. And I certainly would like to. We're right now raising the financing for the film version of the book.
Yeah.
Which I wrote and I'm going to direct, I'm not going to be in it. And, so I've been focusing on that and, writing a couple of other things, but yes, I want to. Because now it's been a little while since I've acted. So now I'm kind of,
but isn't it, do you feel like you're in a little bit of a better space for, did you afterwards, cause you did act a whole bunch after this incident happened.
Yes.
So how did you get yourself back into the swing sort of?
Yeah, I think, you know, it just took a long time, and that period also, I think I had to grow up a little bit. Then I'm able to play moms, you know.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
I'm 50.
But literally
I can
had
be
to
a
grow,
mom.
You literally know? Had to grow up, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And we're in a good period because the 90s are really, really in right now. So
I know, right? It's
you're a familiar face that we all you're a familiar face that we all really love from what we grew up with. So I think it makes sense now for you, the second half, right?
It does. Yeah. It feels like that. It feels like a nice time, and that now is can be a new phase that, and I just think, you know, this going through life makes you a better actor. It just does. I mean, that's
it makes you a better everything, you know, the writer, actor, creative. It's you have to experience, I think, to become, you know.
Yes, yes.
And so the book is Wake Me When You Leave, and you can get that everywhere now. Yes.
Everywhere. Yes. And there's, I also narrated the audiobook.
Oh, awesome.
So that, yes, you can get it everywhere. You know, bookstores, Amazon,
totally.
Audible has the audiobook. Yeah.
This has been a lot of fun. Thank you for doing this. This
has
been great.
Thank you, Peter. It's great to see you. This
yeah,
is
you too.
Nice to chat. And maybe you'll, you know, change that hat next time. Maybe you get it. I can't believe I don't have my, I was literally wearing a Yankee hat before earlier this morning. I should.
That would have been funny for us to go head to head with each other like that. Yeah. All right, cool. Thank you for this. It was awesome.
Thank you.